Welcome to Last Games Night on Earth, a podcast where we discuss if you were given just one last games night, what would you wish for? My name is James, and this is the Dungeons & Flagons podcast. Hello, dear listener. Thank you for joining us. We've got Pete here today to talk about their last games night on Earth. How are you doing, Pete?
I'm all right. Yeah. Surviving in this horrifying post-apocalyptic world that we live in.
Yeah. Hopefully, by the time this airs, we should be out, or relatively out.
I mean, that's a bit of shit for a podcast which is predicated on the idea of the world ending and being alone on a desert, but yeah, I guess it's good. Yeah, obviously it's amazing.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
No, not really.
Okay, first game, what are you playing?
sorry, I thought you were going to be like, oh.
The reason why I didn't miss a beat on that one was because when I was writing out show prompts, and I knew that you were going to say that. As soon as I wrote, do you want to tell us a little about yourself? I said, I bet Pete says no.
Oh, that's annoying. Damn it. Well, my first game is Snowblind by Pleasant Company Games, so fuck you.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, go on then. Let's not tell you this.
I want to talk about me.
Please. I am Peter Blankart. I run Inside the Box board games. We're actually renaming to Inside the Box Game Studio to sound fancy. We're a publisher and development studio of tabletop games. We've done a range of different stuff, the most popular of which is Subterra, the 1-6 player cooperative survival horror game where you get stuck in a cave and try and find your way out again. And there's Monsters, of course, and a range of other bits and bobs. Most recently, Alba, the open world adventure book, which has done very successful, but been very successful and has been very exciting for us because we didn't know how popular it's going to be or whether it's going to be successful at all, but that's been pretty cool. So,
I'm very excited about that. I've backed it. So, can't wait to read that.
It's a chunk, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it's massive compared to most choose your own adventure kind of adventure books.
It's quite funny because I've got like a full set of the Fight and Fantasy books, and they're small kind of like budget paperback size, because like you get them through like school
250 pages, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's like one or two that are a bit longer, Alba is like a bigger format in general, so it's what we call like royal format or something. So it's like a little bit kind of larger, but it's also 1,200 pages long. So,
wow.
It's so big that we're actually having to try and work out a way to like reformat the book for different languages because you can't make books that big.
Oh, really?
Because like the Germans and the Italians that we've been talking to are like, so you have to factor in like 20-30% more pages when you're translating from English into those languages because
it's just
longer. So the German publisher was like, we can't make a 1,500 page book. That's ridiculous. Like we have to work out a way to like squeeze it in a bit.
Jesus.
Kind of hilarious. But I'm it. Board games. That's me.
Yeah. Excellent. Cool.
Books now, apparently.
Sidelining into books. It's the perfect time, the digital era, to get into books. Obviously.
Exactly.
I'm still old school, though. I prefer a good paperback.
It's like a book that trends, you know?
Cool. So, are you ready? We're going to talk about your last games night on Earth. Depending on which way you... It's totally up to you which way you want to look at it. Some people like to look at it as last games night on Earth and go for the bit of a apocalyptic, just reach the pearly gates kind of view of it. And some people like to not think about death for an hour and go for just the perfect dreams games night. It's totally up to you.
I mean, as a self-destructive nihilist, I think, you know the answer to how I'm going to do this. I think, you know, the idealized game night is a nice idea, kind of.
Yeah.
Constructing a picture of what I would love to have as an evening of entertainment.
Definitely. Cool. So, should we start with your first game? I think you said it was Snowblind, was it?
It was indeed Snowblind by Pleasant Company Games. They're an indie. I think it's like a startup by two friends or two brothers, I think, in South Africa, who have done a few projects on Kickstarter. I think we've got most of the games that they've done there. But they released this game called Snowblind. It's kind of push your luck dice game about explorers trying to be the first to reach the South Pole in the kind of the early 1900s. And it's just very slick and very like evocative. And yeah. I just really enjoy it because it's one of those games, it's quite simple. It doesn't take a huge amount of time. You're talking about 45 minutes for a game. It goes, you know, 2 or 4 players quite happily. And it just feels very satisfying. Like you're not making a huge number of decisions, but the decisions you are making make sense. And they feel very evocative of that idea.
Because there's like 3 or 4 different type of actions you can take, isn't there? But there's like, I really like the fact that there's like the simple action you can take, and then you can take the like advanced version of the same action if you want to like push your luck even more. Exactly, I really like that. That sounds cool.
It's kind of like decisions within decisions. Like you can kind of always like broadly make your mind up of what kind of general strategy you might want to employ. Roll your kind of, you know, choosing the dice that you want to roll, rolling them, and then seeing what you want to do with them gives you like a nice bit of flexibility at different stages in your turn, which you don't often get with, particularly with dice games. Actually, it's normally just like roll a bunch of stuff, see what you get, do some stuff. But you kind of by adding that like step in there and not allowing you like millions of options in one go, it like gives you that kind of depth and complexity without it really being like hard to kind of parse it and hard to like get your head around what you could do, which I just really liked. It just felt like, you know, whenever you're pushing your luck, the kind of the consequences of that and the way it was tied into the mechanics made sense for the theme. It's all about like, okay, well, do I go more slowly and more cautiously and kind of establish camps and kind of like leapfrog people from camp to camp, or do I try and like leg it and be the first there and like risk dying, but you know, get a greater chance of you know, being the first there and getting all the prestige that comes with that. But yeah, I think it's a theme that I've always really liked. I've always been really fascinated by that kind of sort of explorer thing,
that kind of like era of just trying to get somewhere for the first time. That's really cool.
Yeah. Also quite nice that, you know, it's not exploring someone else's land and erasing the fact that they live there. So
definitely.
So you get around a horrible colonialist angle that a lot of those games have.
Yeah, definitely. Do you quite like the randomness of it? Because obviously you can play it and, you know, you could have all the strategy planned as much as you want, but if you get screwed over by the dice, you just bomb out, can't you?
I think it's an interesting question. It's like, I mean, I could bang on about randomness all day, but like, The key thing, like when you're designing a game or developing a game or kind of, you know, just looking at one that's been designed, you're always looking for like where you're making a decision and how meaningful that decision is on the rest of the game. And like when you generally find like quicker games tend to be more variable, like the outcomes, you know, of whatever comes out from a deck of cards or a roll of a dice tends to be a bit more swingy, like the kind of results are a bit less predictable. And that's usually fine because you're not that invested in what happens, because one thing only maybe leads to 2 or 3 more things in the future, whereas a big strategy game, one small result might lead to 50 other things in the future of the game because there's so many different steps involved and it takes a lot longer. So like when you've got a game that kind of sits in that kind of 45 minutes to 60 minutes sort of period, you want stuff that keeps you on your toes in a turn but doesn't give you a result that like knocks you so far off course that it basically ruins every future turn, because there's too many turns in that kind of length of game for that to really be viable. So what I really liked about that game was, although obviously the core of it is a random number generator, you're rolling a bunch of dice, you know, like many other games with decks of cards or spinners or dice or whatever, but because it gives you that basically the kind of the choice points before and after you see the result, it gives you a way to kind of predict it. And you're also choosing which dice to roll, and the different dice have different result sort of distributions. And then after that, kind of choosing what to do with them, you end up in a situation where even if you have a terrible roll and it's something you didn't really want, you can still choose how to use that terrible roll. And you already kind of decided which ones to go for in the first place. So it doesn't feel like you've been hard done to as much as some games where you just roll a bunch of dice every turn and see what happens. And then if it's a rubbish result, you're like, oh, that sucks. Like, you feel more invested in what's happened, and you feel like more ownership over the results because you chose like which dice to roll in general. So it's quite a neat trick, and like you've seen it in a couple of different games as well. But answer your question, yes.
One of those things that always comes up with like board games, and some people really like a bit of like the fact that if you roll a dice, it can screw you over. Some people hate it, but you're kind of think that this game kind of hits the sweet spot.
Yeah. there's different games for different people, right? And like,
definitely,
most games have something in them that's random, whether that's, like I say, a deck of cards, a spinner, a dice roll. Other games, you know, there are pure strategy games. You know, chess is a good example. People understand, you know, all the information is on the table. The only thing you don't know is what the other player is going to do. With something like Twilight Imperium or Scythe, there's tons of random elements in there. But it's all about, like, kind of, when you're making those games, like, it's all about understanding what kinds of decisions people want to make, and then what you do with the numbers, basically. It's all maths, basically, all that kind of stuff. So if you understand the maths well enough, you can kind of carefully and kind of intentionally apply a bit of a random number generator to give it a bit of, you know, spice it up a little bit without, you know, overdoing it and meaning it's so swingy that it feels inappropriate or feels like annoying. But yeah, it's tricky to get right. I think it's why, like, the games that do it really well, it's like, that's awesome. Like, you know, you kind of like, nice job.
Yeah, definitely. Anything else to say about Snowblind?
Yeah, it's sick. You should buy a copy.
Do you know what? This podcast is going to end up costing me a lot of money because so far there's been three board games that people have brought to it and I've been like, actually, yeah, that does sound pretty cool. I'm going to buy it. this is one of them. Tiny Towns was the other one with Emily. I'd never played that.
I played it with Emily and Lewis before and it's like, yeah, that's good.
All right, so that was Snowblind by Simon McGregor.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Excellent. So where do you want to go next? Guest or location? Which one do you want to do first?
Oh, dealer's choice, my friend.
All right, then. So you're playing Snowblind. Where are you holding your games night?
I mean, it's got to be literally on the South Pole, hasn't it?
That's going to be very cold.
I mean, yeah, I'm from the North, though. It's fine. Like, I know I've kind of become this like weird East End, you know, liberal now, but I do come from North.
I still wouldn't want to be in the South Pole.
I do feel like, you know, being thematically consistent with my first answer. Yeah, let's go for it.
What about like a research centre in the South Pole?
Yeah, yeah. We'll be inside a building with heating. Yeah. Geographically on the South Pole. Yeah.
Excellent.
You don't have to be outside, yeah, where it's like minus 50.
What about the polar bears?
There's no polar bears on the South Pole, you weirdo. It's all penguins.
Oh, fine.
No, your geography, James.
I always get them mixed up. They're both big white areas.
They are big white areas. Yeah, that's true. Although most of them, both of them are becoming big blue areas because, climate change.
Yeah.
Sad.
So your location is the South Pole in a heated building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah,
excellent.
The atmosphere, you know?
Wind.
Yeah, very windy. I hear quite cold.
At least you'd be focused on the game because there's not much else to look at.
Yeah,
biggest desert in the world, isn't it?
It is the biggest desert in the world. It's very dry, despite being mostly made out of water.
Right. So, what about your second game? Were you getting out after Snowblind?
Well, I had a good think about this. I was like, I really like Snowblind because it's like a really like evocative, like it's like very neatly packaged experience. And then I was thinking like, what game would I want to have on me that's like, you know, I really want to play this a lot. And it's like, I want to have that as a feature of like the last game night. And I thought, you know what? Netrunner.
Ooh, the card game.
Long Rest of the Soul. Like, I really love Netrunner. Like, it's a really fun game. And it's something I played a lot when I first got into kind of modern board games, like before I set up the Inside the Box and stuff. Like it's just got a really good combination of the kind of back and forth that you want from a competitive game, you know, that you get from something like Magic the Gathering or, you know, any kind of combat game or miniatures game or whatever.
Yeah. It's by Richard Garfield, isn't it?
I believe so, yeah. But yes, yeah, so it's like, it's got like kind of like that core competitive feel, which is obviously really hard to do, and the games that do it well are really, really fun. That's a great part of the enjoyment for me. I think the reason why I prefer that to say Magic the Gathering, or, you know, like I really love games like Warhammer as well, but like I think Netrunner has a particularly sort of soft spot for me, or I have a soft spot for it, which way around that is, I don't know. It's just because it's asymmetric, like one player is the, you know, the hacker and the other player is this big company.
Yeah,
it's just really novel. Like, you don't really get that kind of experience anywhere else. Asymmetric games, again, are very, very hard to do right. It's the fact that there's a game that does the asymmetric part of a game incredibly well at the same time as being a really great competitive game. It's really slick, and it's just a really well-integrated thing that all just meshes together really nicely. It just feels like the whole system works really well. and you just are constantly looking for like combos and like, you know, synergies between different sort of card sets and stuff. It's, yeah, it's a very satisfying game. And yeah, I just like to pretend I'm some kind of like 1980s like hacker, just like, you know, plugging my brain into something. Sounds fun.
Yeah, no, definitely. So is it, it's not a collectible card game, is it?
So it's a bit, so Magic the Gathering being a collectible card game, it's like, you know, you get your random boosters and you're like, oh, I got a shiny or a rare card or something. And yeah, obviously like constantly hunting for different cards to try and sort of make the perfect deck. That's what they did with Netrunner and subsequently with some of the other games that Fantasy Flight released. They've since axed Cry, but they still have the Arkham Horror LCG, so living card game, where yeah, they're basically releasing expansions effectively. So they'll release a set of new cards that sort of add to the pool of cards available to make your deck from. But you know what's in those packs when they release them. So they'll release like a list of what the cards are in them. So you're not randomly buying boosters that, you know, may or may not have something that's useful in them. You're getting specific stuff that you know what's in them, like you would an expansion for a board game, which proved to be very popular. And there's been lots of trading card games that have come out over the years that have tried to, you know, come up against Yu-Gi-Oh! Or Pokemon or Magic, and they just fail because they're not backed by huge brands that are already there.
Yeah, the price point puts a lot of people off of them.
Yeah, a massive money pit.
I remember when I was a kid just throwing money at Pokemon.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the main reasons why I never got into Magic was because I grew up and didn't want to spend my money like I did on Pokemon. It was my money. I was earning it by that point. When it was my pocket money, it was okay.
Yeah, you don't want to be thrown up the wall. But yeah, I think it's just like that kind of thing. Particularly with those kind of lifestyle games, like you have one if you have one at all, and it's like that's where you spend all your money. Or like, you know, for a lot of board games people, they don't have one at all. Board games is their kind of thing, so they'll be buying lots of different board games. They might buy accessories, but it's with things like that where it's like that's the one game that you invest your time and your money into. You don't want to be doing that with three or four different games. And like, whereas the LCG model kind of took that bite away from people and be like, okay, you don't have to spend £500 on booster packs to get that one card. Like, it's just, there's that one set that has that card in. It's £15, but like, that's it.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to go nuts about 10 of them, then sure, but like, you don't need to do that.
Have you tried Keyforge? That's his new one.
I have actually. Yeah, I've only played it once. I wasn't as taken with Keyforge as I was with Netrunner. But I think some of the ideas behind it are pretty cool. Like the idea of doing like procedurally generated decks is a really neat idea. And you know, Keyforge was a big hit and Discover was an absolute flop. But I'd be interested to see more people try that kind of thing.
Cool. Well, that's another one that I've never played, but might add it to the list.
Yeah, bankrupting yourself with a few board games, you know?
Anything else you want to say about Netrunner?
Yeah, it's good that you get a copy.
I'm here to sell games.
I mean, it is my job after all. Yeah.
Yeah, but they're not your games.
Oh shit, what? Is that how I'm supposed to do it? Whoops.
I mean, it's better than just kind of you thinking like, oh, is it not one of our games?
Yeah. Wait, I thought I published Snowblind and Netrunner.
I've been selling this to people.
Yeah, wait, I don't be making money on these at all.
Right, done your location. What about your guests? Who are you inviting?
Oh, I've been really struggling with this kind of thing. It's like, who would I actually want to be there? Because I don't like people. Like, this is a bit weird, you know?
You've got a very sociable hobby for somebody who doesn't like people.
No. I think I both really like people and also really hate people, you know? Yeah, very much depends on mood. Yeah, because I think, like, for the last game night on Earth, right, I feel like you want people who you would enjoy playing those specific games with, but also people who you would want to like see out the end of the world with.
Yeah.
So I've got like two approaches to this. One, you go with like the slightly like soppy approach, being like, who are the dearest people in your life that you'd like to have by your side? And obviously I'm not going to tell you what that is because it's just really cringe and not particularly interesting content. I was thinking the more entertaining alternative would be thinking like, would be like, who would make it the most hilarious experience ever to just like go out with a bit of a bang? So I'm thinking, right, Ainsley Harriott, Mr. Bean, and Boyo on Deal or No Deal.
Oh.
I want to say Chuck Norris, but I know that's not right. Noel Edmonds?
No, it's... I was thinking of bloody Deal or No Deal is Noel Edmonds. I thought you were talking about Bargain Hunt.
Oh, no, Jeremy Orange Face.
Yeah.
Like, oh, so yeah. So it'd be Ainsley Harriott, Mr. Harriet. Bean, Noel Edmonds.
Is it specifically Mr. Bean or is it Rowan Atkinson?
No, it's Mr. Bean, the character.
Oh, God, trying to teach him any board game would just be...
And then Sandy Toksvig, specifically because I feel like she just, like, take the piss out of all the other people there and none of them would really notice. And, like...
Just because it's so highbrow.
And she'd be very frustrated with everybody, and it'd be kind of entertaining watching her being frustrated with everybody and also her taking a piss out of everybody without them realising. And Mr. Bean just being very confused at the whole situation in general.
Mr. Bean just can't get over the fact that he's in the South Pole.
Yeah, exactly. Mr. Blobby's hanging around in the corner, but he's not actually playing. He's just kind of, like, sat on his phone.
God, having Mr. Blobby anywhere near me would make me cry.
Pretty
disturbing. Do you not think he's terrifying?
Mm. Children's TV really freaks me out. Like, as a child, I couldn't watch Teletubbies. It was disturbing.
Mm. Like, fucking Rainbow. That was horrible. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Queenies, the lot. Yeah. This is all really disturbing. Like, I was watching Peppa Pig with my nephew once, and I was just like, why is there a pig with two eyes on one side of its head? That's just wrong.
Have you heard about the Peppa Pig phenomenon? Have you heard about the Peppa Pig thing in America? Where apparently loads of kids are growing up with British accents because Peppa Pig's so popular.
That's incredible.
Oh, that's a great selection of guests. And I reckon they'd be quite fun to play games, except for Mr. Bean.
No, I reckon he's jokes, mate.
Yeah, but trying to teach him anything, he's just there for the comic relief. He's not there to play games.
Yeah, I mean, I'm mainly there to play it with Sandy Toksvig, if I'm honest. She's the only one that's probably capable of playing the games.
The other people I just want there.
Yeah.
Right, cool. I like it. So, what about your third game? What are you ending the night on?
As the famous saying goes, choo-choo, motherfuckers. It would have to be Ticket to Ride. It's a basic bitch choice, but I fucking love Ticket to Ride. It's just really good.
It's one of those, yeah, I think doing Last Games Night on Earth, I think Ticket to Ride is going to come up quite a few times.
Mm. It's just a good, clean, fun game. Solid. It's fun every time.
Mm. Most of the people that I know who say they don't like it, it's just because they've played it too much.
Yeah, I mean, like, I played it a lot. I'm like, you know, I would prefer to play, like, the expansions and stuff now because it's, like, a bit more interesting because I played the original one a bit.
Which one do you like the most?
The expansions.
Yeah.
Tot up between Switzerland and UK.
Mm, cool. Are they pretty different? Or are they just, like, different skin, like, different maps?
Some of them are quite different. Like some of them are basically just like a different map, pretty much.
Yeah.
Like each one ostensibly has like a new mechanic in it, but some of those are quite surface level. But yeah, the UK one's quite good because you almost have like a tech tree, which is quite like an interesting way of looking at it. And then Pennsylvania is very good. It has like a stock market as well. So yeah, it's good. I like playing all the different ones.
Because like the New York one, but that's it's basically just the same. Exactly the same game, just condensed into like 15 minutes. But
yeah, exactly. It's a cool idea as well. Like,
it works. You know, I love
it. Make it a more accessible thing. Yeah, I think it's a Ticket to Ride. It's a good crowd pleaser of a game. Like, you know, I can play that with family members who aren't as bothered about games, or you know, friends or whoever that's like, you know, you wouldn't normally get them playing sort of hobby games, but they're quite happy to sit down and go for Ticket to Ride. It's like everyone gets trains. Like, you know, they're just like the kind of universal thing. Like, trains are cool.
It's one of those ones where it's like, it's very easy to explain how it's so much more simpler than Monopoly or pretty much any board game you probably have played before.
Exactly, yeah. It's simple, straightforward, and fun.
No, it's a great game.
Mr. Bobby to shout choo-choo every few seconds.
So that's Days of Wonder, Alan Moon. No, I really like Ticket to Ride.
Watching.
Is he?
I'm really coming from Southampton.
Oh, cool. I always assumed he was American. Yeah. So what are you having for your random special item?
Vuvuzela.
You've got Mr. Blobby in one corner, Mr. Bean in the other, and then somebody with the thing that I can't say.
I mean, it's obviously Noel Edmonds has the Vuvuzela.
Why? Why would you want that?
Because I just want, like, pure and unadulterated chaotic energy at this party.
Fair enough. I mean, it's your game, Simon.
Yes, it is, James. Yes, it is.
Shut up and give it me. Yeah, so do you need anything else to make it perfect?
You know what? Like, I've been thinking about these all day because I had a bag of them at the weekend and I really want to go get some more. Snyder's salted caramel pretzel pieces. I just, like, they're just like crack, mate. It's just you've got your salty, sweet umami combo. It's just it's unbelievable.
So you just want a shitload of those.
I just want a bucket of them. Like not like a little crisp bag where it's like, oh, I've eaten them. I feel a little bit full now, but like I can still eat a bit more. I want like a catering bucket.
Try a trough.
Yeah, exactly. And I just want to like scoop it out with my like hand shovels. Like, you know, fucking go to town on it. Like, have you seen those like digger things you can put on your hands for like scoops?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Like that, and just shovel it in, you know, like highest flow rate possible of Snyder's to my face. It is so good.
I mean, you're in the South Pole, so you'll need the calories.
Exactly, yeah. And getting, you know, salt and sugar at the same time is really important, especially when doing a lot of exercise. Yeah, and obviously to get there, we'd have to probably do quite a bit of that. So.
Amazing. So that brings us to the last, the ABCD game. Which one do you want?
Ooh, C.
You've got yourself a joke.
Oh, Christ.
Are you ready? Because honestly.
Go on, man. Brace myself.
My friend is fishing mad. He even bought a house on Avon Close as tribute to his favourite river. Just in case you wondered, I live at 32 Spearmint Rhino Avenue.
Oh my God.
These jokes just get worse and worse. They're not even like, it's so bad they're good.
It's just bad.
They're just so awkward. Every time I tell a joke from that book, I'm like, oh, do I need to edit? When I'm listening back, I'm like, oh, do I need to edit that long, awkward pause, or do I leave it in to really just how bad that joke was?
It's just, like, you know, when you're like watching TV and there's a scene where it's like really awkward and you get that like third person sense of awkwardness. like watching The Inbetweeners, where you just like, someone does something just really cringe and you're just like, oh. Felt like that.
Felt like the whole of the American Inbetweeners pilot episode.
Oh, God.
Oh. Have you got anything you'd like to plug, Pete?
As always, gotta plug the shit out of some stuff. We've done the Kickstarter for Albert, but what we will be doing pretty soon now, probably in the next sort of few weeks, is we'll be launching a worldwide search for more writers for the Open World Adventure Book series. So because it's done so much better than we thought, we've accelerated our plans to expand the series into a series rather than just a one-off.
Yeah.
And we're doing a big competition, which will basically, you know, it'll be about a 6-month long, kind of a big opening window for submissions and a kind of sort of judging process with an expert panel of judges. And a cash prize of £5,000.
Jesus.
With five £1,000 runner-up prizes and a ton of like other ones. So I think there's like, you know, a couple of hundred like free books and stuff like that on top of that. Yeah, basically we're on the hunt for people who want to be writers for the Open World Adventure Book series. So we'll be open submissions for that hopefully in the next few weeks for that chonky prize.
So where can people find that? Is that going to be on your website or?
Yes, it'll be on our website. So that'll be itbboardgames.com. Or if you can't find it for whatever reason, our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all at itbboardgames, YouTube, email, mailing list, carrier pigeon, smoke signal, semaphore, etc. Word of mouth tends to be a little difficult when everybody is isolated to houses currently, but hopefully by then we shall be more mobile. But yeah, assume if you're listening to this, you will probably have it thrown in your face a bunch of times on social media. So, but yeah, that'll hopefully be launching in a few weeks. And games-wise, we'll be doing our next Kickstarter, Ecliptic, which is a partnership project with the Royal Observatory.
Oh, no way. Awesome.
It'll be developed in-house, which has been exciting. And it's a simultaneous action selection Euro game about being the best astronomer in the 18th and 19th centuries. It should be pretty funky, and we'll be releasing that later this year.
Cool. Anything else?
Yeah, I mean, I could go on for hours, mate. So, yeah.
Do you want to just, we'll just say, check the ITB website, eh?
Yeah, just like, honestly, easiest thing to do, like the Facebook page, and like, if you want, sign up to the newsletter. Like, those are the easiest places to find out about what we're getting up to, you know, what stuff we're making, when it's being released, Kickstarters, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, hopefully we will see some of you, dear listeners, on our Kickstarters in the future.
Excellent. Well, so we've had your first game was Snowblind. The location was the South Pole. Second game was Netrunner. And then your guests were Noel Edmonds, Mr. Blobby, Sandy Torksvig, and Mr. Bean, and Ainsley Harriet.
And Ainsley Harriet.
And then you went to Ticket to Ride. And then your random item, what was it again? What was the snack? Oh, no, the random item was the...
The Vuvuzela.
Vuvuzela. I cannot say that.
Vuvuzela.
Vuvuzela. And then what was your snack that you had at the end?
Snyder's salted caramel pretzel pieces.
I'm just going to write that down because they do sound quite nice.
Absolutely banging.
Well, thank you very much, Pete, for that. Did you enjoy it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, I said, oh, yes, like the bulldog.
You got cut. You got cut off, so it just sounded like you went,
No, have a lovely time, thank you.
Well, I had a great time. Thank you so much for joining us.
I know, Bobber.
And there's just one last thing to say. As always, thank you so, so much for listening. If you want to get in touch with us about anything at all, find us on social media with @LGNOEpodcast or email us at lastgamesnightonearth@outlook.com. If you enjoyed it, please consider telling at least one person. It's the best way to help spread podcasts. And if you want to help support Dungeons & Flagons' events in the future and keep the podcast going, check out our Patreon by searching Dungeons & Flagons. I've been James, and this has been Last Games Night on Earth, a podcast by Dungeons & Flagons. Thank you.